Fourth of July weekend, Independence Day. At so many studies, economic people get paid to make research on, you know, what makes the economy grow and what's the effect of the economy when it grows, and you know all those things they study. People get a degree and do some research. But lots and lots and lots and lots of research on the affluent society. Does the American model, just paraphrase what all these researchers have found, there where there's freedom of choice, happy. If you don't have a choice, then how can you be happy? But if you have freedom of choice, then you're going to have more happiness. And then when you have greater affluence, then you have more choices, so you should have more happiness. It's logical, right? So are people more happy? Are the affluent people more happy? Guess what research says? Big N-O. No. There's a very humble professor at Princeton University named Professor Enderlein, and he named his research after himself. The Enderlein Principle. Professor Enderlein. You know, with a chart that goes like this, that says, as affluence increases, should not we expect people to report greater happiness? Because now they have more freedom to make more choices. So we would expect happiness to increase, but in fact, it's the opposite. Etc. Hundreds of those things. Freedom of choice doesn't mean, and a greater range of freedom of choice doesn't mean greater happiness. So what's the position of happiness? And according to our Srimad Bhagavatam, the position of... Well, it took... Count to 50, everywhere. The position of happiness is very simple. It's being in harmony with the Supreme. And one who is in harmony with the Supreme feels Atma Suprasana. Yenatma Suprasidati. In the Canto 1, Chapter 2 of Bhagavatam, that phrase is used multiple times, slightly different variations. Yenatma Suprasidati. Why? Why is it? It's repeated because it's important. People want happiness. There's nothing wrong with wanting happiness. We want happiness. But what's the nature of that happiness or contentment? What to speak of? Suprasana. Krishna gives the indication in Bhagavad Gita, same prasana is there. Brahmabhuta, prasanatma. Na sochati, na kangsati. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Well-known verse in Bhagavad Gita. Attaining the platform of Brahman, attaining the platform of na sochati na kangsati, not hankering or lamenting. Even Buddha got that one right. I mean, excuse me. Buddha's, one of his principal teachings is sufferings of a living entity are due to desire. Solution? Take a dagger and just stab desire to death. Make desire zero. No desire. Now, the sochati nakangsati has to do with desiring for material happiness. And as soon as there is a desire for material happiness, you're in the realm of duality, and there's the unhappiness, because that's what duality is made up of. There's this, and there's got to be its opposite in the world of duality. So what's the position of no material desire? You can try to make desire zero. We were discussing this with a number of just in class at Chicago Temple. I'll just share this with you. I want to read one verse in purport. This is just warm up to get ready for the topic. So the positive sense of happiness and the positive sense of freedom and the positive sense of contentment and, in fact, unlimited freedom, as unlimited as the Supreme Lord is unlimited. That's pretty unlimited when you're in harmony with the Supreme Lord. If you're not in harmony with the Supreme Lord, then what is it? It's an illusory existence. So because we've been observing the Festival of the Holy Name in Chicago, so I shared with the devotees something that recently happened in my travels. I was at Austin, Texas, and I met a young man who had graduated. He had finished his graduate studies at UT Austin, and now he was employed. And from his time as a student at UT Austin, he had met the devotees. They have a club, a bhakti yoga club at UT Austin. So he started going there, and now he's graduated. And since graduation, he wanted to speak with me. You know, he didn't want to ask a question in the public forum, and I knew the young man, so he spoke. He said, since I've graduated, I've had more time now for my spirituality and my spiritual practices, and one of the principal practices that I've been doing for some time now more is a kind of meditation, and I find that kind of meditation, it's easier for me. I can get absorbed in it, and I find, you know, some strength in it. And then I'm also trying to do some chanting, but I find that the chanting for me is kind of mechanical, and I'm not drawn to it as much as this other. Now I know the value of chanting, so can you help me understand why this is happening and what I should do? You know, why and what to do? So, because I know the person and understood a little bit about his nature, I just started asking some questions, and I said, are you doing the type of meditation that you're doing, is it the kind where you try to empty your thoughts or you try to fix on one thing? He said, the first one. And the first one is by following breath plus emptying your thoughts. No comment, just... So then I asked, when you do that, what's your experience? He said, well, it takes some time because there's lots of noise in the mind. But after some time, the mind becomes quite peaceful and I feel contented and a kind of concentrated spiritual strength. That's very nice. And then how much time do you spend in meditation every day? This much time. And when you complete your meditation, then what happens? He said, well, very quickly, that contentment and concentration and things, it kind of dissipates and goes off into the air. He said, exact same thing that I experienced before I was a devotee, became a, you know, practicing Hare Krishna devotee. I was doing some chanting, but I was also doing some of that first kind of meditation. And what it told me was, while it's powerful to concentrate, it's not stopping activity and stopping the mind is not what's natural for us, because from reading Bhagavad Gita, the soul is active. So we need that which is natural for us. We need something where we can have that state of consciousness while doing activity, because that's what's natural for us. And then I shared that Prabhupada said that kind of contentment, it's like banging your head against the wall and it hurts, and then you stop and you go, Brahmananda, the bliss of the termination of the turmoil of material existence. But the turmoil of material existence is due to the soul's implication in matter that isn't resolved just by trying to anesthetize to make it nothing. Because we're active, so we're going to be involved in something. Unless you take shelter of something. That I gave this example that Prabhupada gave. Supposing you send a rocket ship in the air to get out of the gravitational field of the earth, big force is required. And the rocket can then take off and overcome the gravitational field of the earth and go floating around space. But how long can something go floating around space, especially if you have an astronaut or an occupant inside the capsule? Eventually you're going to run out of oxygen or something, and food, or you have to come back. Unless you can take shelter of something where it's natural, the natural needs are met. So similarly for the soul, unless there's a place where you take shelter, and the material atmosphere is waiting us. In fact, we haven't really gone out of the material atmosphere. Now let's look at the mechanical chanting, mechanical, repetitious, monotonous, or something like that was his word. I said, why are we in the material world to begin with? Do you have a clue? What's the principle that brings us here? What's the principle that holds us here? It's our aversion to what Bhagavad Gita teaches. It's our aversion to Krishna. Ichadvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. All living entities take birth in the material world overcome by the dualities of Icha and Dvesha, desire and hate, in relation to the Supreme Lord. So maybe you should consider the difficulty that you have with Mahamantra chanting is related to your aversion to Krishna. Because this means establishing your relationship with Krishna. Forgotten, restoring that relationship with Krishna. And then when you restore that relationship with Krishna, you're not independent anymore. Even the notion of being independent. Because actually we're not independent, we're dependent. We're dependent at the moment for the air to breathe. For, whatever it is. Our existence is dependent. Every moment, we're dependent beings. We think we're independent, we're not independent. Like, it's freedom or declaring independence. We're not independent. What is that independence? But the reason why being in this condition, material condition, the realm of duality, is because of aversion to Krishna. So if you could address that issue, I think you'd find the Mahamantra chanting a whole other experience. It's this affinity for not being in a relationship with Krishna, impersonalism. And then he sat up, said, oh, yeah, I've heard about this, impersonal and personal, and I was thinking impersonal is some monster over there somewhere, rather than, me. But not being comfortable where there's no Krishna, doing some meditation where there's no Krishna, and doing meditation where there's Krishna, one is I have an easier time with it, and other is I have a struggle with it, has to do with my aversion to Krishna. I get it. So what's needed is a change of heart. And when there's a change of heart, then those potencies, because he had heard the philosophy, so he just repeated it to me. Nijasarva Shaktis, all the spiritual potencies are within each and every one of Krishna's names. But there's nothing missing in the mantra. What's missing is how I regard Krishna. If I can't receive those potencies, instead it's mechanical or monotonous. And then the other is I'm attracted because there's no obligation in my relation to Krishna. But I feel some relief. A little other anecdotal, and then we'll go to the Bhagavatam verse. In New York, our temple is in Brooklyn, the Radha Krishna temple. Radha Govinda Mandir is in Brooklyn. And the Brooklyn temple is right above the A train, directly beneath, not only the sidewalk and the temple is the A train. So when the A train goes rumbling through, the whole building shakes. Fortunately, it was made by the masons, the people that constructed the Chicago Temple. There's no subway under the Chicago Temple. But the whole building shakes. It's a good foundation. Very strongly built building. When the A train goes rumbling through, the cars on the street that have car alarms, the alarms go off. And when people, they eventually learn not to leave the alarm on, because all day long the car alarms go off, this cacophony of sound. You know what that sound sounds like? What, to speak of many of them? And then another one, and then another five, and da da da. Is it really loud? Ooh. Then it becomes lunchtime. People go out and turn their car alarms off. Ah, Brahmananda. But what's the positive happiness of the soul is another thing. Cessation of the unwanted portion of the feature of duality. With that, you also lose the so-called wanted portion. You have to be a portion. You have to be neutral. Na sochati, na kangsati. But from that Brahman platform, that's the platform from which devotional service can be performed, or say it the other way. Devotional service, the positive activity of the soul, is performed from the Brahman platform. And those who are properly engaging in devotional service will come to that position. Na sochati, na kangsati. Samak. Sarveshu Bhuteshu. That was the topic that I spoke about today. Through the medium of chanting, how one can naturally just continue nicely hearing and chanting, and from that realm of genuine bhakti, rendering devotional service to the Supreme Lord, because he's in the heart of every living being, one can then see equally all living beings. Not that you cannot see the distinctions between forms, but you see the nature of the spiritual reality that's animating the various forms and manifestations of life. The tree, the bird. There's a little guy that, is he still back here, Niranjana? This jackal that lives back in the corner? Still there? You haven't seen him? Way back when we were first looking at the property, someone said, Soka Krishna here? No. It's a Chicago temple. There was a family, and don't go back, at least at that time, don't go back in that corner, because when the little baby jackals, you don't go mess around with mama jackal. You're going to have a problem. But within the heart of that living entity is also the spirit soul, and super soul is within the heart of everyone. So we may be careful about Mama Jackal back here if she's got some babies, but we can see if one is elevated in spiritual consciousness through purification of chanting and hearing, then one can see eventually in higher stages of bhakti, see that position primarily. And then have the maximum amount of freedom. So now I'm going to read one verse and Srila Prabhupada's wonderful purport from Canto 1, Chapter 6. This is Narada Muni has visited Vyasadeva. The earlier section is Vyasadeva has completed compiling all the Vedas and then all the corollary literature of the Vedas, the Smriti section of the Vedas and Vedanta Sutra and everything, all this work is done. Major, major work. From my Tattva Sandarbha studies, the portion of the Puranas on the heavenly planets is 60 billion verses, and Vyas then reduced or some shiptam, he consolidated to 400,000. That's a lot of work, 60 billion, and making sure that when doing so, it's like, you know, an editor wants to keep reduced number of words, but without losing the essence of the communication. Anyway, taking all the Vedas, which are vast, and dividing them into four, and with all their corollary literatures, amazing, vast, vast amount of work. Not an ordinary person can do that. So therefore, generally an empowered living entity. So after completing all of that work, he was still feeling, he looked within himself to see how it had come out and felt despondent. He was very puzzled. Why am I feeling despondent? All of this effort was done for the service of others. People that will come in the future periods of time in the age of Kali and will then have this wonderful literature to assist the soul heading towards elevation and ultimately liberation from the cycle of birth and death. Why am I feeling despondent? So Narada came, Narada said, making it short, you've done very good work, except for the fact that you have not sufficiently glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He went on to elaborate how that could be done and what such a literature would do, be of benefit for the people of the age of Kali who you wish to serve. And then you will feel not despondent anymore. So many things were described, and then Narada is getting ready to leave Vyasadeva's ashram. This is at the end of chapter 6, just before chapter 7 begins, where Vyas does what Narada instructed him. So the discussion, this is text 37, out of 38 verses in the chapter, where Sutta Goswami, he's narrating all of this to the sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka, followers of Bhrigu Muni. And Sutta Goswami said, thus addressing Vyasadeva, Srila Narada Muni took leave of him and, vibrating on his Veena instrument, he left to wander at his free will. And Srila Prabhupada's very eloquent purport. Every living being is anxious for full freedom because that is his transcendental nature. And this freedom is obtained only through the transcendental service of the Lord. There's many jewels in this purport, so you have to listen carefully. illusioned by the external energy, everyone thinks that he is free. But actually, he is bound up by the laws of nature. A conditioned soul cannot freely move from one place to another, even on this earth, and what to speak of one planet to another. But a full-fledged, free soul, like Narada, always engaged in chanting the Lord's glory, is free to move not only on earth, but also in any part of the universe, as well as in any part of the spiritual sky. Maximum freedom. We can just imagine the extent and unlimitedness of his freedom, which is as good as that of the Supreme Lord. Why? Because the Supreme Lord empowers him that way. Why? Because of his consciousness. He's qualified to receive that benediction or that privilege, that freedom. There is no reason or obligation for his traveling. No material impetus. And no one can stop him from his free movement. Again, it's similar to Ahituki apratiyata yayatma supersedati, verse earlier in this canto, where there's no material cause for devotional service, so there's no material check for devotional service. So here's something over here. On this side, maybe something that can start material. What something material that can start devotional service, or something material that can stop devotional service? There's nothing material that can start devotional service. Circumstance don't create, nor does circumstances impede devotional service. Devotional service is not have either the beginning or the end, or the cause or the deterrent. Something Narada Muni doesn't go somewhere to get something. There's no material impetus for him, nor is there something materially that can check him. And so he has total freedom on both ends. He's not bound by some obligation or being pushed by some material force to go get something he's feeling the lacking of, and then so he goes somewhere to get something. There's no fruitive intention in his heart. Nor is there anything, no obstacle materially, that can check him. Similarly, the transcendental system of devotional service is also free. I mean, you don't have to be Narada Muni, just be engaged in devotional service. It may or may not develop in a particular person, even after he undergoes all the detailed formulas. It's not mechanical. It's not a vending machine. The bhakti process is not a mechanical process. It's a devotional process. Even if one, you put your coins in the slot and pull the lever, pure devotional service may not come sliding down the chute. Not that kind of a thing. Similarly, association of the devotee is also free. One may be fortunate to have it, or one may not have it. Even after thousands of endeavors, therefore, in all spheres of devotional service, freedom is the main pivot. Just three more sentences. Without freedom, there's no execution of devotional service. Meaning, the free will must be operative. You must say yes. Krishna invites you, or a representative of Krishna invites you, please engage in my devotional service. Krishna says, Sarvada mamekam sharanam braja. The invitation is there from Krishna. We can say yes or no. There's freedom involved, operative in the realm of devotional service. The freedom surrendered to the Lord does not mean that the devotee becomes dependent in every respect. For example, we don't lose our free will. We don't lose our freedom. We're exercising our freedom freely. We don't lose it. We use it. something that you use, you may lose. But in this case, it increases. To surrender unto the Lord through the transparent medium of the spiritual master is to attain complete freedom of life. Those that are not free, they're bound. And they're bound by the gunas, the three modes of nature. I'm sure you know this. One of the English translations of the word guna is rope. I often think of this because it's not so common in the West. It's quite common in India, traveling here and there, to see a cow that has a rope around the cow's neck. And the rope has on the other end has a stake or a little piece of wood stuck in the ground. And so whoever is caring for the cow takes the cow to some certain place, and the cow can graze within the perimeter of where the rope allows them to go. And they can't, there may be some nice grass over there, but they can't go over there. They have to stay over here. Unless the rope lengthens. Well, some cows seem to have more rope, some cows seem to have less rope. So what about us? The modes of nature are, there's more freedom for those who exercise the free will choice in the mode of goodness. Although it may look like there's a number of do nots, discriminating persons in the mode of goodness, there are certain things they just won't do because it's not within the realm of the mode of goodness. For example, they won't steal. They'll tell the truth. There may be some austerity in telling the truth. Or they won't lie, or they won't steal, or they won't cheat, or they won't gamble, or they won't do certain things. Because those that do those certain things, the rope they have is shorter. There's a reaction, and the reaction is their freedom reduces. By misuse of free will, freedom reduces. You get a shorter rope. So that's within the modes of nature. Shortest rope in the mode of ignorance, let's say, below the human form of life, insects and trees and so forth. Restricted, greater restricted. Mode of passion, still restricted. Mode of goodness, less restricted. Narada Muni, unrestricted. Unrestricted. He can go anywhere. He doesn't need an airplane, he doesn't need a passport, he doesn't need anyone's permission. He just doesn't even need a reason to go there. That's, what kind of freedom is that? It's the freedom that's gifted to Narada because of his position, his use of free will, to make his will in harmony with the Supreme Lord's will. Now that's a free will choice. You don't, again, repeating what Prabhupada says, you don't lose your free will when you do that. You're using your free will when you do that. And by so doing, the greatest potential of freedom is found. Who could have a greater... You can't make an argument. What freedom does he have? He's subject to the will of the Supreme Lord. We're all subject to the will of the Supreme Lord. He's exercising his will in harmony with the Lord's will, and therefore the greatest freedom. Even his body is spiritual. That was described by Narada in the previous section here, where in his previous life, without all the detail, as a small boy, he received bhakti, again, by the free will choice of those who were able to give bhakti, they gave. And he received, he cultivated, he practiced, he saw the Supreme Lord, he heard the Supreme Lord's voice, he lived his whole life in devotion. At the time when he left his body, he attained his spiritual form. And then by the will of the Supreme Lord, because total independence is not there, but by the will of the Supreme Lord, He lived within the body of Mahavishnu, and he again took his birth as the next day of Brahma, as the son of Brahma. And from the time of his birth, complete freedom. As free as the Lord is free. That's pretty complete. That's the standard of complete freedom. Or any other position that a person who has dedicated themselves to the Supreme Lord may receive. That is, acting within a relationship, a loving relationship with Krishna, provides one with the greatest freedom. Although worldly people look at the lifestyle of such a person, a devotee, and, you know, they hold their head and say, you know, it's too restrictive. Or how do you guys have, what do you do for fun? You should come to our Harinam programs and see what we do for fun. You do dancing, you should see us dance. And you like your music, you should see our music. It carries the soul to such lofty positions, etc. You like reading. We like reading. We like viewing. The spiritualizing of each of these things gives the greatest potency, the greatest happiness. So, standard of freedom, take shelter of the personality of Godhead. And the converse, the notion of freedom or independence or happiness that comes from more free will choices accessible in the realm of duality, it doesn't result in happiness. It results in a much greater sense of unhappiness. Just to end with this, I'm on Tuesday. I'm starting a journey to China. One of the places I visit is China. And one of the questions, from time to time, depending upon the circumstance, I ask young people, do you feel that the quality of life in China is better today? China's prospering like anything you've seen. Without all the details, there's a history of what Shanghai is such a city. There's so many people in Shanghai. It's less people than Beijing, but it's so many people. Without all the detail. I don't know what the number is. They know what the number is. It's ridiculous. We visited Shanghai, got in a taxi from the airport to go to the place where I was staying, which was with some devotees who are professors at the university there. It's a 45-minute drive. The whole drive was one of those elevated, whatever they are, you know, expressway things. And it was at night, and so all the way for 45 minutes is skyscrapers. Like Manhattan is like a big city, but it's not 45 minutes of skyscrapers going, you know, zoom, zoom, really fast. How many people? But what did it used to be? It used to be a fishing village. Sometime not so long ago, there's some history, a British devotee was narrating this to me one time. Something, something, and, you know, to appease somebody, they gave them the village and they built it. It was not so long ago, it was next to nothing. Now it's this ridiculous place. Super polluted, ridiculous place. So many people. So has the quality of life improved? There's no hesitation to say no. You know, China at one time was an agrarian economy like so many other places. And then kaboom, you know, the economy went nuts with production and manufacturing and everything. Standard of living, quote, standard of living is higher. Is the quality of life similarly gone up? No hesitation for people to say no. You get the idea. So what is freedom? What is happiness? What's the standards for these things? Our standard message from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam made references to It's the position of taking shelter, of devoting oneself, body, mind, and words, devoted to the service of the Supreme. That's the position of real freedom. Not just, you know, freedom, but freedom from all the features of duality, of material existence. But duality still goes on, but it doesn't impact you in the same way. Okay. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions from standard of freedom topic? Yes, sir. Raise your hand again, please. Well, someone over here raised their hand. No. Okay, you raise your hand.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is that if you align your activities in mode of goodness, so you're saying the rope lengthens?
Yes, it will be lengthened. You have greater freedom than if activities are aligned in passion or ignorance. Yes.
To do more devotional service or to align your will with God's will, or like what?
More devotional service is not necessarily the standard. Someone can be very passionately running around doing more devotional service, so volume is not exactly, you know, the goal to aspire for. More is always nice, but transcendental love within those activities that one does is the standard. And when there's transcendental love, then one also wants to maximize, you know, in realistic terms, the devotional service that one does. Quantitative. But most important is qualitative. The love and devotion with which we offer something, whatever it is that we do. Does that address your question?
Yeah.
Exactly. Can you rephrase your question? You're clear about what your question is?
Yes, so...
Go ahead, say it again.
So if you align your activities in mode of goodness, is that like your ultimate goal? Is it to like align your consciousness with God's free will? Like,
yes.
Right. That's...
And but I don't know why the preamble of when you align your activities in the quality of goodness. Let's take, for example, Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is inducing Arjuna to fight. Question. Is that aligning Arjuna's activities with the quality of goodness in order to fight? No. So that's not the standard. The standard is Krishna's indicating A and B. A is, Arjuna, you have a particular nature. You should, according to dharma, according to theistic conduct, you're to give protection. That's your duty. Perform your prescribed duty. According to your nature. Guided by theistic principles. But fight. So that's Arjuna. So it's not just, the standard is not just, in general, one should align one's activities in the quality of goodness. Why? It's more that, for us, is more conducive for awakening of our quality of devotion. Meaning, using an example from the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you try to ignite wet wood, versus igniting dry wood, which is more likely to ignite? The dry wood. So make wet wood into dry wood before trying to ignite, or before expecting igniting. Similarly, molding our activities or aligning our activities with the quality of goodness helps get closer to the igniting position. But it's not a prerequisite. it's something that gradually will take place in any case. So even Arjuna is a Kshatriya by his psychophysical nature, he's also very compassionate. Kshatriyas are compassionate. Qualified Kshatriya is compassionate. However, his compassion is misplaced. That's what's being corrected by Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita. So now, question again to you. Have I answered your question?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else?
Okay. So this question is from my uncle. He is visiting from India. So he's asking, can we go desireless by chanting of mantra?
Can we go where?
Desireless, like can we kill our desires?
Can we become desireless?
Yeah, by chanting
okay.
Regularly.
That's the question. Let us explore what the definition of desireless is. There's an impersonal and there's a personal definition of desireless. Impersonal is literally zero. No desire. And then the spiritual conception is the desire has no material affinity to it. Rather, it's completely in harmony with the spiritual reality, the non-dual spiritual reality. Is there desire such as that? Answer, yes. Yes or no? Yes. For example, the residents of Vaikuntha. There's no material desire, but there's desire. Spiritual desire. What's that spiritual desire? The glories of Lord Narayana. And being engaged in service to Lord Narayana. It's a spiritual desire. So can spiritual desire, that kind of desirelessness, meaning no material affinity, asat trishna is the Sanskrit, thirst for the impermanent, asat trishna. Yes, the answer is the mantra, sound vibration of the name Narayana or the name Krishna or names of the Supreme Lord, the potency is there to, on the one hand, fully attract us to Him, on the other hand, full detachment from asat. Full detachment. So that kind of desirelessness, awakening of fullness of full potential of the soul's spiritual desire. Sabal has something.
Guru Maharaj, I was sort of touched by the story that you told of the boy who was doing the impersonal meditation and how you guide him to understand and realize that the block was basically the rejection within the heart of Krishna or the aversion towards Krishna.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm thinking that a devotee, say, like I'm going to speak for myself, that is still battling with inattention and not being fully there while trying to, you know, chant the holy name. But also have experienced, you know, Krishna's mercy and, you know, appreciating that and having that type of gratitude towards, you know, Krishna's kindness that has been shown in a very tangible way in my life. It's sad to realize that actually, you know, one still hovers, you know, this aversion towards Him. And is it like that in us who are trying to become or to, you know, do devotional service and appreciate the life of being in devotional service? that one still, you know, that's a manifestation of aversion towards Krishna.
You're making a statement that is remarkable and it's embarrassing. Well, in our discussion in Chicago this afternoon, humility for a person who's honest, like you're being honest, it's humbling to see that disparity. I've received so much, and still I have aversion from that person from whom I've received so much. Not just like everything that everybody else has received, but way above and beyond what everyone else has received, and I still have this aversion. It's very humbling. But humility is a gateway or prerequisite to gratitude. Say it the other way. Without being humble, how is one going to be grateful? So the light went on that said what you just said. Still I have this aversion, although it's something like a child that has received and received and received and received, and you know, they said that, you know, please and thank you thing that good mannered people are supposed to say, please and thank you, but you know, still having some aversion to and still no deeper feelings of gratitude towards the source from which I've received so much. There's a little light that goes on that says, not just religiously I should be grateful, but feelings of gratitude and feelings of not no longer aversion, but wishing to move in the other direction. Humility is a precursor for gratitude, and gratitude is the precursor for love. So for us, we chant because we're obliged to chant, exactly as Prabhupada said. There's no question of taste. We're chanting because we know that we're meant to chant or do the duties of our life with an understanding this is meant as an offering to Krishna. Yad karoshi, yad asnosi, yad shahosi, dadasi yat, yat tapasya sikonteya, tat kurashva madarpanam. So we do those things because we should do those things that way, but the aversion or the feelings of gratitude are not so deep. We haven't overcome the aversion factor. It's duty. So recognizing this helps one become humble, and when one becomes more humble, the deeper sense of gratitude becomes more gratitude than the awakening of love becomes possible. In that fact, it will naturally follow. So service with love rather than enchanting with love, with deep feeling rather than the other kind. It's just part of the stage of getting over our, you know, attitude issues towards Krishna. They're deep. We've been in a mature world a long time. Who can say how long? Too long. That's how long. Something else? Yes.
Sometimes I feel that why did Krishna give this free will?
Sometimes you do what?
Sometimes I think that why did really Krishna give us the free will? Because, you know, because of this free will we are acting against Krishna, you know.
Well, it's not exactly that Krishna gives us free will, although it's not incorrect. Rather, it's the free will is intrinsic to the soul. It's of our nature. Not something that Krishna is going to take away, or not an option on the menu. Because we're part and parcel of the Supreme who has unlimited free will, so we have tiny free will. It's intrinsic to our nature. And the flip side of it is, it's there because in our natural constitutional position, there's love. And without free will, there's no love. So that's in our wholesome or well condition. Now in the disease condition, free will is still there, just misused. So your question specifically is, why does Krishna give us free will in the first place? Because we're part and parcel of Him, and in our natural state, we're in a relationship of loving service. But that there's the option to say no, otherwise it's not love. You must love me or else, and there's no or else. It's only one thing. You love me, got it?
Yeah, I got it.
That's not love. It's our nature. And we're rebellious. So there's consequences. Not a fault on Krishna's part. Nor even, again, just editing. Not that Krishna gave us free will as if he could take it back. It's of the soul. It's like faith. Faith is of the soul. We can repose that faith in Krishna or no. And if it's no, then there's faith according to the modes of nature. And people do things, whatever they do, with some faith in whatever they do. You name it. The people that go running after money, with money I'll get happiness, so they go running after money. Or these people that do the terrorist things. Whatever mode of nature it drives that one, there's faith. So they're driven to do. And then they pick up people who have similar modes of nature from other places, and they also do. It's just this mode of nature phenomena. Driven, or, you know, but faith is the principle that's of the soul. We could blame the modes of nature. But it's our free will, misuse. Yeah. Looks like everyone's happy. Yeah?
This question is not 100% clear to me.
Uh-oh.
Hi, Maharaj. It is probably misunderstanding, but I feel a little worried when I hear like devotional service is not a mechanical process, that when you do something, you get something. Whereas I'm trained in the whole material life so far, that I need to do this thing in a particular way, then I'm sure to get it.
It's acknowledging our conditioned nature. So there's a difference between sadhana bhakti and bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. We do something in sadhana bhakti because we know it's prescribed for us and we're going to get something. But unmixed emotional service is without that. So we need the prop, just like this, you know, description of chanting. We chant because we know it's prescribed for us. And from that something, we're going to get something. Chant and be happy. Okay? Yeah.
So then when I hear also that just doing volume of service, the activity, I'm paraphrasing it, like it appears that it doesn't have any value. I need to do with some level of love and devotion now, but I don't know how to get that.
Well, there's some level of value. That's the sole premise of Narada's position may look like to somebody, what's the value in all that? You know, he doesn't have fun. Value is, you know, fun or that which brings happiness, meaning material happiness. And where's the material happiness in Narada Muni's life? So what's the use? So he can go to be like, to me it's unattractive, because where's the happiness? He doesn't do this, and he doesn't do that, and doesn't do that, and doesn't do that, and doesn't do that. too many no's, too much restriction. He must be suffering. He can go everywhere and suffer because too many no's. You get the idea. To the materialist, that's what it looks like. Now, for you, let's, by we'll acknowledge that we're not pure. We're mixed. We see something and we want something. So we cultivate this whole idea of unmotivated devotional service is something to cultivate. It's to come to this, like this question of no desire. It's to come to the stage where there's no more material desire. Until that, there's material desire. So we strengthen the spiritual desire component, which is specifically desire to be in service to Krishna, and that will take care of the material dimension of why we want to be in Krishna's service, because I'll get something. So initially it's because I'll get something. That's our conditioning, that's the paradigm that we're very well trained up in. And so do something to get something. Fruitive. But there's another dimension. So it's being amplified. While we're being honest with our position, we cultivate ahoitakiya pratyata or anyabhilasha tushanyam jnana karmadya navratam. We cultivate that. Anukulyena krishna anushilanam. We cultivate that. By regulation, by sadhana, by standards. Okay, it looks like we're done. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada.